From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of May, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. I'll ask you to make this phone call, 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. Or go to willag.org and hit the donate button at the top of the page to pledge your support to Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. About 40% of our budget comes from you. I like the $120 level. Less is fine. More is great. Also today, we'll talk about the weather forecast. We'll do that with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather. And we'll hear from Gerald Mashongi. He is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. Takes a look at expense ratios and particularly the high price of inputs and what that's doing to budgets on the farm. All of that happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Dial that phone, 217-244-9455.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.64 1/4, three lower. July at $4.72 1/4, down 3 1/4. And December contract up a penny. It settled at $4.47 1/4 for the corn. Soybeans in the May contract at $10.40 1/4, up 5 1/2. July up 5 3/4. Settlement price at $10.50 1/4. New crop November soybeans, $10.24 a bushel, up 5 3/4. Bean meal down $3.50. The bean oil 78 cents higher. Wheat futures in the July soft red at $5.31, up 1/4. The hard red July at $5.27 1/2, down 2 cents for the day. Live cattle futures were $1.25 higher on the day. The feeder cattle 57 1/2 cents lower, and the lean hogs in the July contract down a dime for 100 pounds. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at this marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. A few producers are finishing up, but you're far enough to the south in Illinois, about an hour south of Champaign-Urbana. I'm wondering whether you're still in the field and, well, actually out of the field at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we've had over half inch rain this week in small amounts. In all honesty, it's less than what they were forecasting, so we're happy about that, but we just can't get anything going. There's a few people in here where we're at that, I don't know, maybe they're half done. We all know it doesn't take any time to get things done, so I'm not super concerned about it. It looks like we're going to have a couple of weeks of good running, a little bit of a chance for rain over the weekend, but by all intents and purposes, I expect that when we talk next Thursday, I'm going to be, you know, hammered down.
Well, let's talk about the marketplace. The only thing that was hammered down was oats yesterday, and they didn't open today. That's the May contract off 25. Didn't open to the best of my knowledge. However, the rest of the trade has been fairly quiet. Soybeans finished probably a bit higher for the day. Corn down a little bit. What'd you think of the trade?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, we had positive export sales again this week on corn, over 1 million tons, but our front months, we saw bear spreading. So 2 days ago, big time bear spreading, yesterday bull spreading, come back in with bear spreading today. It's very interesting to see that, especially as most of us are looking at the balance sheet, assuming they're going to have to tighten things up again on old crop. We know that new crop balance sheet's going to look burdensome, to say the least, but you know, you would think that a lot of these people that are looking at this spread thinking, man, this thing could really get hopped up this year, probably scratching their head on a day like today. I do think overall the corn market's going to struggle to rally whenever you've got this big window opening up. Most people understand we're going to get this crop planted probably in the next 2 weeks, and so that's probably holding this corn market back just a little bit. While the soybean market, yeah, rallied today. I mean, you look down at soybean oil and you're up 70-80 cents on the close. I mean, very strong day for soybean oil. There's some enthusiasm that a trade deal is going to be struck with India, which is supposed to have a fair amount of, I don't know whether it's guarantees, but trade deals that would be beneficial towards soybean oil exports out of the U.S. to India. And clearly, we're still looking to find more clarity with the RVO. But overall, yeah, soybeans had a pretty darn good day, especially relative to corn.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're thinking producers should do as it relates to marketing. When you look forward into the month of May and June, Do you want to market corn and soybeans, and how much, relatively speaking? And do you have some price levels that you're thinking about? Most will be under that, thinking in those terms, I believe, and I suppose you are too.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at corn, for instance, old crop corn, I still think most people are down to gambling bushels. I have no desire to do anything there. I know that some posted bids in our part of the world, 8 to 10 over, I heard that there were some pushes paid yesterday at 20 over. And clearly, that's got a lot to do with the fact that, you know, these prices on the board have been nothing to get excited about, whereas producers don't have a lot of corn left. So I think old corn's good property. As far as new corn goes, you know, the studies that we've done show that when you come out of February, if the crop insurance average is above what the print is, you know, to start the month of March, over the last 20 years, we've every year seen the market go back to that average price. That average price is 470 here this year. So I just don't get too excited right now. I think there's still a lot of question marks. No doubt next week, you're going to have a very burdensome balance sheet, like I said, as far as new crop goes. But at the same time, you know, the Western Corn Belt's going to have to see a little bit of a change of fortunes as far as their weather's concerned, because they're bone dry in a lot of places and very concerned about what the prospects might be for moisture. So right now, you know, I'm being a little more hesitant. Beans, I think you just kind of follow along. I mean, with beans, you've seen basis narrowing as well. Not very many beans out there. So if I've got old beans, I'm probably going to wait around. And then on new crop beans, you know, I guess if you're expecting to see some sort of a rally, beans have the same history. When you come out of February, that price this year is 1054, you know, and we're here at 1023. So I've got to think that we'll see this bean market catch some sort of life in here. And if you get a weather market to unfold, you should have some price targets in there. My price targets, Todd, would be a new high for corn at 480 because we've got corn sold already, you know, and then our targets for beans, because we've got beans sold already as well, would probably be something in excess of 1054. And a lot of that has to do with the individual grower, because a lot of folks can't make 1050 beans work very well on their farm, and it's still early in the year.
Anything else we should be watching as we go into the month of May? The WASDs are due out, of course, on the 12th.
Yeah, the WASD is a big one. I think whenever you look at the May and June WASD, you're probably going to have a tightening of old crop, but then you can't take your eyes off of that June planted acreage report. There's a chance, if we've got enough fertilizer, that acres could even go higher. So I would like to do a lot of marketing before June 30th in a flexible fashion, especially if the weather stays inclement out west. But by all means, I think ignoring what could happen June 30th with a bigger acreage number might not be the smartest idea.
Thank you much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Much like all of the rest of the information, volunteering all of the product that comes to you from Illinois Public Media on ag programming. Each and every volunteer, including Matt Bennett, who you heard just a few minutes ago, our analyst today, as well as tomorrow's analyst, and all of the analysts that you hear in the ag programming, volunteer their time. I hope they make a difference to you and your marketing plans. I bet they do. And if they do, we're hoping that you will dial in with your financial support right now. Don't wait. Do it at 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. Or go to willag.org and hit the donate button at the top of the page. I like the $120 level. That's just $10 a month. More is fantastic. Less is fine, too. But do give. Do give, please, at 217-244-9455. We know our listeners really count on the information and have for a very long time. In fact, this program, the Closing Market Report, is celebrating the completion of its 40th year. We've had more than 10,000 episodes of the Closing Market Report, done more than 30,000 interviews. A lot of history here, and it goes much farther back than 1985. It goes all the way back to 1922, the very first broadcast from this broadcast station was an extension agent talking about dairy. It has more than 100 years of commitment to agriculture in the state of Illinois. Please take time right now to dial in that support at 217-244-9455 or go online at willgive.org. And make sure you put in the comments section or tell the person that you're talking to you're pledging in support of agriculture. We're now joined by Gerald Mashongi. He's in the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics on campus at the U of I, an agricultural economist, and has penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website, a series, in fact, with Brad Zwilling, about the financial efficiency of Illinois grain farms. Thank you for taking some time with us. I need a definition from you first, Gerald, because much of this revolves around the operating expense ratio. What is it?
So it is a measure of financial efficiency. And what it does is that it just represents the share of a farm's returns that are used to cover day-to-day operating expenses. And when we're looking at expenses on the operation, we don't want to include financing effects. So we exclude interest along with depreciation. And the simple way of calculating it is we just divide total operating expenses, excluding those interest and depreciation expenses, by the total gross farm returns.
So you took a couple of decades worth of data and then pulled some trends out of them. What did your analysis show?
So what we've been noticing is just starting off with the individual components. What we've seen is that when it comes to operating expenses, they don't vary as much compared to gross farm returns, right? But overall, from these multi-decades, the two past decades, what we've seen is a steady increase in those expenses and in gross farm returns. However, what we're seeing, especially in more recent years, is that there's been a sharper increase in operating expenses. And also that coincides with the recent decline in gross farm returns. And the net effect, obviously, if you consider the ratio, is that we're seeing a higher ratio. So the idea is when you look at the ratio itself, the financial scorecard that we use, it's a great tool just to pretty much quickly give an indication of the quality of that ratio. So in terms of measuring it, if you have an operating expense ratio that is less than 60%, what that means is that that's a good indicator. This just means you just have more of your income to use for other uses. But if you find your ratio between 60 and 80%, that is a cautionary or satisfactory figure. And a ratio above 80%, that's considered a vulnerable category. And what we saw is that in 2022, just looking across all of Illinois grain farms, at the median, again, we don't want to have that effect from large farms. What we're seeing is that in 2022, that ratio was in the strong range, right? So that was a good indicator. But going from 2022 to 2023, it shot up into the vulnerable range at the median.
Were there some trends in cost on operated acres that you can run through?
We actually break that down. We speak this operating expense ratio across different farm sizes, so small, medium, and large. And the way we define the farm sizes are we consider a small farm as having gross farm returns that are less than $350,000. And median is between $350,000 to $999,999. And large farms, we're considering those greater than $999,999. So just looking at four of the larger components of operating expenses, what we did see in the data is that a significant driver has been the rise in fertilizer costs. And that's one of the reasons pushing up operating expenses.
And what things have not gone up as much?
So looking at labor costs, they haven't gone up as much. But still, this is a significant component of operating expenses. We've also seen that with seed costs as well, they've gone up too. But again, relative to fertilizer, not as much. And we also do show pesticide costs, you know, relative to fertilizer costs. The big driver is just fertilizer.
Any final takeaways from the articles?
I think, you know, 2025 is going to really be a tough year, again, focusing on fertilizer costs. We're seeing the trade tensions that are going on between the Trump administration and China. And obviously, one method of retaliation from China is to use export controls when it pertains to fertilizer. So we just hope that there's going to be a resolution when it comes to that. Again, just looking at the data, it looks as if this is a sensitive component on operating costs. And again, going tying back to this operating expense ratio, we just need to be mindful of this ongoing situation.
Thank you very much, Gerald.
Appreciate it, Todd.
Gerald Mashongi is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You can read the article, the whole series, actually, that he and Brad Zwilling have penned for the FarmDoc Daily website. The last one is titled "The Financial Efficiency of Illinois Grain Farms, Examining the Operating Expense Ratio." Mike Tenura is now here. He is with T-Storm Weather, where he serves as the president and CEO and has a very complex weather forecast coming up for the Corn Belt, I believe. Mike, can you tell me what's happening across America?
Well, absolutely. This is one of the more complex patterns that you can see. The reason that is difficult to explain and to understand is because we essentially have two big systems in the U.S. that are going to form over the next week. One is going to end up in the western U.S. and into the plains, and one is going to end up in the eastern Corn Belt. Now, this weather pattern is very complex because both of them are going to be disconnected from the jet stream. And the jet stream is where the strongest winds in the atmosphere are. And the strong winds that blow from west to east most of the time take these types of systems and then blow them from west to east. But when they're disconnected, they just kind of float and bubble around, and they don't really have a lot of direction. And this wreaks havoc on computer models because the physics behind these models are basically dependent on having a typical west to east flow. And when they don't, then these little tiny errors that all models have become real big, real fast, and that leads to ever-changing weather forecasts. And it's going to be a challenging period ahead in that regard.
Well, let's start in the eastern Corn Belt and tell me what you're able to discern at this point about the next 5 to 10 days, I suppose.
Well, the first 5 days are pretty clear. There's going to be scattered showers and thunderstorms across the southeast half of the Corn Belt. This will include most of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, as well as Missouri and Michigan. It also will extend into parts of the Mid-South, and it's primarily because the first upper-level system is approaching us today, and it'll drift into Illinois and Indiana this weekend, and then it basically stalls overhead. So just kind of a showery period is developing, and that's going to linger for basically 5 days. We don't think these showers will come to a complete end until sometime Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday next week.
And then for the second 5 days, or in the western Corn Belt, whichever way you want to go at this point.
Sure. Well, the second 5 days, it'll start to dry out initially as that system moves away. But then the next system approaches from the west. And that's a real tricky one because, while it's pretty apparent that that system is going to move across the southern U.S., it's not clear how far south is going to end up. If it ends up in southern areas of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, then over into southern Missouri too, that's going to be a problem because any rain there with wet conditions that already exist in the forecast that we talked about into next week, that's just going to leave conditions wet for a while. So that system is going to become an important one because we need it to pass to the south for things to dry out. But as we noted, it's not going to be a situation where we wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden the rain chance is gone. This is going to be a complex situation for many days, because computer models don't perform well in this setup, and that's going to leave it pretty unclear until that event is right in front of us, which really won't be until about a week from now.
So tell me about this second part of the system and what you're watching.
Well, it's a completely independent system, and that one is essentially going to move across California this weekend, and then it's going to drift into the plains once we get into early next week. There's going to be a major rain event from this event across the hard red winter wheat region of Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, and even Colorado. And Colorado is an important one because that's where we still have a drought in place. We think this whole drought is going to be wiped out next week by that system that should bring 1 to 3 inches, which is almost a month's worth of rain for most of this region. And for some areas, it's even more than that. That's going to happen over just a 2 or 3 day period. So the drought will end there. The problem, though, with that system for corn and soybeans is that eventually it's going to move east. And that's where it gets tricky, because if it moves again far enough south, then that'll leave a lot of these corn and soybean areas dry later next week and next weekend, and maybe this wetness story goes away. But the more likely scenario is that it will at least move across the Mid-South. It'll probably clip parts of the Corn Belt. That's what's going to keep this wetness story going for a while longer.
And after that, I know things get much more unclear, but what do you think the last third or two-thirds, I suppose, of May might look like?
Well, you're asking a question that is just extremely difficult to answer. I mean, from a probability standpoint, if you look at the type of La Nina that we've been in and the neutral setup that we have now with water temperatures close to normal in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, all the springs that we've had with that setup were wetter than normal across the 7-state Corn Belt. So what we're seeing and what we've been seeing is pretty common of that type of setup. And we're defining springtime as April and May, which coincides with planting season. A couple of weeks from now is only May 15th. And so you just would have to think that similar weather is going to continue beyond then, at least in that southern and eastern area. One thing we haven't talked too much about to this point, Todd, is areas to the northwest. It's going to be pretty dry in Iowa and Minnesota and the Dakotas going forward. So they're going to be on the other side of this whole setup. And that's going to be a pretty great window for planting for them, with nice warm temperatures in the 70s and 80s and very little rain all the way through May 10th.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd. Great being here.
That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Mike is just one of six different meteorologists and climatologists that we talk to each and every week here on Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming. If their weather forecasts make a difference to you and your marketing plans, particularly as we cover not only the state of Illinois and the Midwest, but all of the growing regions across the planet, particularly in South America during the winter months here, then please take some time right now and dial this number at 217-244-9455. I hope it makes a difference to you, enough of a difference to you to go to willgive.org, if not dialing that number, and make a pledge of financial support for the ag programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Either way, tell the person you're talking to on the phone in support of agriculture, or put that in the comments section if you're online, so that the management here knows that you're making a financial pledge in support of agriculture. And thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.